Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. With the secularization of the culture, the removal of God from government, schools, the institutions, the public square, results are inevitable. A return to ancient paganism with all of its tyranny, injustice, violence, and sexual immorality. Basically, a return to Sodom and Gomorrah. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6. If God condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter. The scripture assures us that the sin and the ensuing destruction is what happens when a people live, as the text says, ungodly lives. That is, living apart from God and his laws, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God. And of course, by default, replacing God's law with civil law being a function of whatever men desire. And that's always the path to Sodom. So as this pagan ideology has taken over our country, the schools, the libraries, naturally switch from books about Christian moral behavior to books affirming, normalizing, and promoting the sexual immorality of Sodom. And this creates a conflict because there are still laws on the books from our Christian past that prohibit the sexualization of children. And there are parents who still hold to Christian morality. Children ought not to be reading books telling them that pornography and sexting on their phone is like candy. The Sodomites and their supporters have reached a critical mass in our country, and they've taken over the institutions. Hence, we read about all these school board conflicts between the Christians and the Sodomites, and about libraries having drag queen hour for children. Last week, I interviewed a Christian couple in Glen Ridge, New Jersey, who had a run-in with their own town library. Their story made national news, and I want you to hear their story, because the persecution they experienced will be coming to our town, and there's a spiritual lesson we need to learn here in preparation for what is to come. So without any further ado, here's the interview. I'm with Dave and Fran from Glen Ridge, New Jersey. Thank you for inviting me into your home and doing this interview. But before we get started, I'd like to read a passage of scripture from Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59:14. Justice is turned back and righteousness stands far away. For truth has stumbled in the streets and uprightness cannot enter. Yes, truth is lacking. And he who turns aside from evil makes himself a prey. So Dave, you have a story to share with us and your interaction with people here in Glen Ridge. And I'll let you start and then Fran can continue.
Sure. So Fran and I have lived in Glen Ridge for about 23 years. Glen Ridge is a bedroom community to New York. It's about 7,000 people here. Schools are considered, you know, top-notch, and really the reason why people move to the city is for the this town is for the schools. We, along with a couple of other a few other folks, founded a group about a year and a half ago called Citizens Defending Education, and really the reason we did was because we became aware of the fact that the school board had actually hired a diversity consultant to come in and conduct an equity audit in town.
DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yeah, DEI. And it was kind of a bit unusual because budgets are really tight in this town, and they ended up spending about $25,000 to do it. They interviewed about 65 kids in the school and spoke to about five in a focus group. So it was a little odd. And then we were concerned because they had, as part of this, put together a series of recommendations for the school to start to institute diversity training in the sense in some of these new woke ideologies. So things like microaggressions and biases and gender theory and so forth. So we became aware of the fact that the school had already started to institute some training of their teachers in critical race theory. Ibram X. Kendi and so forth, some of the books that they were now recommending to the school to institute into the curriculum on things like critical race theory, gender ideology, some very sexually explicit types of books were being introduced. So we went to a local board meeting, introduced ourselves as our group, and said, look, we're looking for accountability, we're looking for transparency around some of these issues. We're here, we're going to kind of announce ourselves. And
how did that go? With your initial announcement that you were starting this group?
Kind of blasé. There wasn't really much. We actually got some pushback from some people that in town through on our website, on the website that we had created, kind of angry. But it was only just a few people.
Sure.
And so we did a mailing. We tried to create some awareness in the town around what's going on around some of these woke ideologies. We had become very aware of what was happening in places like Virginia and Loudoun County, and the fact that this stuff was starting to sort of seep its way into the school system. You know, I'm in the corporate world, so I'm aware that some of these ideologies are starting to, you know, diversity trainings and things of that nature. And I think the thing we were concerned about is, you know, these words are great, diversity, inclusion. There's nothing wrong with them theoretically, but oftentimes they're being used today as kind of fronts for these very progressive woke ideologies that are being instituted in various parts of our society, and we just wanted to get to the bottom of it. So there wasn't too much going on for a while with our group, aside from what we had already done. And about midsummer, this past summer, a young woman in town who has a couple kids, small kids, had gone into the local library and had reported back to us that she had come across these books that she was shocked by. They were on display in the children's section of the library. Very explicit sexual content in them, and she went to one of the librarians and said, you know, what is this? How could you possibly have this in the library? And the librarian that she came across with was a little embarrassed and said, yeah, I agree, it's a little shocking, but if you have a problem, why don't you fill out this form, and which would go to the library director in town, and you know, you can make your case, essentially. So we did. We spent a couple months actually putting together, reading all the books, and we had gone in, we had found 5-6 books, probably more than that, but there were 5 or 6 that we really identified as egregious, and we wrote our own reviews, read them, made examples and so forth, and ended up submitting those to the library.
Well, that took a lot of work, right? Put that together.
It did take a lot of work.
Check those books out and to write.
Yeah, and we're not. This isn't our full time job, you know. Obviously, we're right. Working and people are busy, and so it did take a while to get all of this stuff pulled together. But we did. We kind of compiled it into one big package and submitted it, and then we heard from them pretty quickly, didn't we?
Yeah. So in July she came across those books. So myself and another person followed up and went into the juvenile section where she had found those books, but we went up to the young adult section, which in our library is targeted towards probably about 10 years old and up. And I was surprised what I found in the young adult section. I had not been in there in a very long time. We have 3 kids who went through this system. Our kids are now in their 20s and graduated from college. So it had been a long time since I had been in there. But in the young adult section, what I was struck by was that the entire section is decorated only in pride flags and signage all over. And I noticed a lot of things when I was in there. I noticed things that on the nonfiction section, that all of the books were primarily focused on social justice, white supremacy, white fragility, things of that nature. But we just did a light search, and we found a lot of books that were in keeping with the books that this woman had found downstairs in the juvenile section. And we brought them home, and then we sort of sifted through them, and we returned a bunch of them because we really just wanted to be careful that we were focused on the very sexually explicit books, because that was the thing that had been so alarming to the original person who had found those books. And so we did keep six books. And as you said, we worked on those and we shared them amongst, and we did not do those together. We did those separate of one another. Everybody had the forms. I asked the librarian for the forms and made copies. And then as people finished, they just handed us the forms and passed the books on. Took a couple months, and then in October, we did compile those. We made three copies, and we had a cover letter, and I hand-delivered them to the library director. I asked her to sign for it. I took it to the superintendent and to the mayor, because both of them are by default on our board, library board, by default. They don't really show up, but they have a default position there. So we handed those in, and then very quickly we received a response. So I believe it was like October 24th we handed those in, and then I think it was November 7th. was the board meeting, the library board meeting in November. And the day of that meeting, when we all went to go to that meeting to talk about these books, that very day we received the response from the director. And across the board, every book, every person who filed a complaint, she rejected every request for evaluation. So these are requests for evaluation of library material. That's all.
And this is because the director of the library turned these down.
She turned them down. Right. So she just out of hand and used a template letter and said that she was not going to evaluate these materials, that they met their book selection criteria, and she attached the book selection criteria pages for us, and that they received good reviews, and therefore that justified them keeping those, ever placing them and keeping those. The reviews were by Kirkus. Kirkus is a review company that you pay a lot of money as an author to get a positive review on your book, right? So we literally got that response like the day before the day of that meeting, but we went in and we had the response, and we talked to them about the books, we talked about the response, we talked about Kirkus reviews and how this was not a legitimate reason, and that we didn't see how these books met their book selection criteria, because these books do not present more than one perspective, and the book selection policy says that it's a fair and it would be considered a balanced, right, perspective. But there are no other books. There's just these books. So we went in November. We spoke with them. We talked to them about the fact that, you know, we were not. We didn't feel satisfied with her response. So they said, well, you can submit an appeal, and then the whole board will take up the cause. So we did. So in December 5th, we submitted the appeal, but then it's a little convoluted. We didn't have the right cover letter and signatures. So then we went in December. We spoke to them again about this. At this point, they have moved the library trustee meetings from their usual gathering space, which is a room in the library. In November, we're the only people there. In December, they moved it into the municipal building, where now they're sitting up in the chamber, and we're in the seats down. So that's where that was held in December. We were still the only people there. They had a Zoom call. We got our appeal in. The final version was in January. They said, we are going to have, we'll have the hearing for your appeal in February. And then things blew up in January, and we never made it there.
And what blew up?
Well then, okay, so then January 23rd, there was a town council meeting, and I happened to just see it on Zoom. It just came up on my computer, and I was watching it, and I was like, oh, what? There was a guy there, and he was speaking to the town council, and he was saying, tomorrow, something about book banning, and tomorrow we're going to roll out our PR campaign, and I'm looking for all of your support. And I was just sort of, what? What is he talking about? And then one of the town council members who's also on the library board unsolicitedly began to talk about it as well. So I was like, what is going on? And that was January 23rd. The next day, that person who was speaking, unbeknownst to us, had formed a group in Glen Ridge called Glen Ridge United Against Book Bans, and they launched their PR campaign, which was petitions, t-shirts, lawn signs, social website, social media, and media. So they had two print and one television in quick succession. And they had a narrative that said that there was a group of conservatives in town who were trying to ban books, and in so doing, remove the LGBTQ representation from our town. Hmm. And they went on to say even worse things, like that we would make Glen Ridge an unwelcoming town and unsafe. And so they spun that narrative, and that narrative ran really fast through their website, all the social, the Glen Ridge Facebook pages. There's two of them that have moderators and administrators. It was blew up all over those. There was no contest. Nobody contested it. It was just, this is how it is. These people want to ban books. They're homophobic. They're racist. They're white supremacists. And they want to, they're attacking the LGBT community. And then, and on their website as well, they were representing us as wanting to take away the representation of the LGBT community. Yeah.
So they had a town council meeting now, right, where many of these people showed up in support of the LGBT
curriculum.
They
had the library board meeting. So then that library board meeting was February 8th. So they built that, they built their campaign off that narrative. And that, then by, the, so we were able to track them because they were unapologetic all over the internet. They brought in activists from outside Glen Ridge. They enlisted the help of Out Montclair, which is a big activist group in Montclair. One of the women who is a officer or leader of Out Montclair is also a psychologist in Montclair. She had a huge op-ed that they ran. What was that? Which paper? I don't remember. They were all over the media, and they were, you know, telling this whole tale about these book banners, book burners, etc. And then the February 8th thing. Okay, so on January 24th, that all happened. Then we started receiving all kinds of hate mail through our website, in our CDE email, and alarming, borderline threatening emails. So by Thursday, we called the police, and we filed a report. We wanted them to know that we felt that we were in some sort of, potentially some sort of danger. At that point, we got cameras for our house. There were people on, like, social media saying, who are these people? Where do they live? Who has their addresses? It was that kind of rhetoric was happening. And it's escalating. So we're hearing there's hundreds of people coming. There's 500 people are coming. And it's escalating. And the mail that we're getting is escalating. The level of it is escalating. Get out. Get the expletive out of our town. No one wants you here. You know, you racist, you homophobes, yada, yada. So, needless to say, February 8th comes. Yes.
They had the meeting, and what was the, how did they decide the meeting?
Well, they also had a rally before the meeting. And of course, there were t-shirts, and there were lawn signs all over town,
And signs. They were carrying signs.
They were carrying signs and chanting and whatnot. And the media there, New York media, actually we had Channel 2 News come out and came to our door, and we ended up giving them a short interview before the event. But yeah, there's a lot of media there. I think there ended up being 800 or so people at the event. And it was pretty much a staged event where, from what we understand, a lot of people got up and spoke, told their stories. And then at the end of the meeting, the library board triumphantly announced that they were not allowing the book ban, and so everyone cheered.
Not only did they have a rally ahead of time, but the Union Congregational Church in Glen Ridge, hosted them, fed them. That's where they got all their t-shirts distributed.
That was a very LGBTQ compliant congregation then.
Oh, yes, and there was an interfaith letter that was sent that was signed by an awful lot of pastors and in our area, all supporting these books.
That's what I was going to ask you about. You know, what was the response of the churches
Terrible. Yeah.
It was a well-oiled machine. And actually, we've done a little research over this time, and we recognize that the ALA, which is the American Library Association, which is a very progressive organization, actually has a training for their library directors on how to combat people like us. Mm. And they have a whole campaign set aside. And the guy who organized this response to us basically, you know, kind of checked all the boxes of how to combat people like us. And so I think, you know, we went through this process. It's been pretty uncomfortable since the decision in our town. There's a lot of, either people just not saying anything or people, you know, continuing to say nasty things about us. But I think that as we have gone forward and had some media outlets treat us a bit more fairly, there is a newspaper in town that wrote a very fair article, spent a lot of time with us, presented our case, you know, fairly in the community. We have had some people in the community starting to reach out and starting to see that this is a little strange. But I think, Brad, the thing that is upsetting about this, there are two things. Number one, there's no discussion about actually what the content is here. It's all this, talk about LGBTQ and, you know, book banning and whatnot. It's kind of a smokescreen. What's in the books? That's number one. And then the number two is, you know, how can we silence you? How can we malign you so that your message doesn't go out? Those are the two things that are happening. So I think that I will say, if your audience is not familiar with some of these books, they should go to their local library. I'm sure they'll find some and take a look, because they are shocking. I mean, we're talking about, you know, highly sexualized graphics. We're talking about, you know, children masturbating each other. We're talking about, you know, anal sex descriptions and in-depth discussions on how to do it. We're talking about instructions on how to sext, which last I saw was actually a legal activity in the state of New Jersey. We're talking about instructions on how to consume pornography and calling it a sugary treat that kids should enjoy. You know, we know, and probably your audience knows, that pornography is an industry of victimization. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this final question here. What's the spiritual lesson that you believe the Lord has taught you through all this? If you could kind of sum it up, I'm sure you've learned many spiritual lessons. But what does the Lord really impress on your heart through this event?
For me, it's we have never wavered in the sense that we know God brought us into this to see this through. I think that's one thing that we've been unwavering in. We know that He allowed us to do this. And I think that we recognize that this is something that maybe we've been treated pretty poorly in this situation, but this is something that's going on not just in Glen Ridge. It's going on all over the state, and it's going on all over the country. So I think this is something that, as a Christian, I believe God is raising people up to sound the alarm. And we see ourselves as those that are standing on the ramparts and waving the flag and ringing the bell and saying, you all want to take a look at this, you know, and hopefully, you know, God is doing great work in this.
Yeah.
Watchmen on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah.
And God bless you. And, I'm sure there's going to be some great opportunities coming your way through this.
I certainly enjoyed my visit with Dave and Fran. They're a solid Christian couple with a deep commitment to the Word of God. To sum up what God is teaching us through this event, I'd like to point out four or five main truths. First, as I mentioned from the start, the reason why this is happening in America is because this is the inevitable result of removing God and His law from the nation. Instead, the populace has embraced a secular humanist basis for morality. Rather than morals being based upon the transcendent law of God, now morals, civic law, is to be based upon human passion and desire. And also, the basis for law has now become equality. There must be moral equivalency for all human behavior, lest anyone would be offended, because the goal is no longer to not offend God, but to not offend man. For man is the standard. Man has replaced God. Man is to be affirmed rather than God. And that shift in our morals, in our moral foundation, changes everything in a culture, moving it toward immorality, toward mankind's default sinful nature. At the LGBTQ rally in Glen Ridge, supporting the library books, LGBT people stood up and told their stories about their victimization and how the acceptance of these books is so important to their identity. And so this is why these books should not be banned, because these books affirm their lifestyle. But do we see what's happening in this? Truth is being determined not by the transcendent law of God, but by human feelings and experiences, so that human stories become the proof or the arbiter of truth. 75 years ago, these people would have been laughed off the stage because few people thought in terms of determining right and wrong on the basis of people's own experiences. What used to matter was the rightness or the wrongness of the action based upon a higher law, a law outside of man, what's called natural law. But that's all changed. An author of one of those library books spoke at the rally, Greg Johnson, the author of All Boys Aren't Blue. The mother of Johnson spoke to the crowd saying, "Live and let live. Who are you to stop anyone from being who they are? Would you rather see children committing suicide? Would you rather have children living a lie?" So it's clear where Johnson's mother gets her basis for right and wrong, from her son's own choices. The secular basis for morality is described in a key text about homosexuality in 2 Peter chapter 2, speaking about Sodom. "And if God rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men," unprincipled is the Greek word athemas, literally without law, rejecting God's law in favor of one's own law. And that pretty much sums up the situation. Unprincipled people. We also see the same idea repeated in verse 10. "And especially those who indulge in the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority, daring, self-willed." Along with rejecting God's law, of course, they also despise God's authority. And they're not God-willed. They're self-willed. And this is mankind's final rebellion described in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The Greek word for rebellion, apostasia, is transliterated into the English apostasy. Christians, as God's prophets to this generation, need to explain this moral shift in our dialogue with town boards and politicians. You know, just like Elijah on Mount Carmel explained to the people their departure from God and their embracing of Baal worship. Or as Paul on Mars Hill explained to the philosophers where they went wrong in their idolatry. You know, of course, as soon as we start mentioning the Bible and a God-centered basis for morality, our opponents will want to shut us down, claiming separation church and state. But it's very important that we work into our statements the man-centered versus God-centered basis for morality. This truth is not being discussed because people don't want to be confronted with the actual basis for their moral choices. In the new documentary, Uncle Tom 2, and I highly recommend that you watch and share that movie, Vodi Baucham, in addressing critical race theory and ideology that has taken over the black community, does what I'm talking about, explaining the false ideology behind the policy and behavior. Quote, "What we're seeing is another religion communicating another meta-narrative and another worldview concerning who we are, why we're here, what's wrong with this world, and how can the world be made right?" And then the false gospel of Marxism, cultural Marxism, is then compared with Christianity. And the church needs to explain the same comparison between Christianity and LGBTQ ideology. Second, another point to note, is the outpouring of support for these sexually explicit books. The LGBTQ lobby went into action. And I believe this was a surprise for Dave and Fran, and it's been a surprise for many Christians who have experienced the same pushback when they have stood up to inform elected officials. Recognize that LGBTQ activism is the Great Commission of the LGBTQ religion. Public affirmation is crucial. If right and wrong are determined by man, the LGBT community must have public affirmation in order to feel good about themselves and to assuage their guilt. They find their power and their rightness in numbers, in man, not in God. And this support for LGBTQ is not just a phenomenon in left-leaning Glen Ridge or Montclair. This has happened in every community. Last week, the Colts Neck School Board had two members who proposed an amendment to require teachers to notify parents of their gender-questioning children and to require students to use locker rooms and bathrooms in accord with their biological gender. And that sounds reasonable. But they were voted down 7-2. These board members and teachers wanted to keep the parents from finding out about their children choosing to be transgender. And they want to break down male and female distinctions in bathrooms and in locker rooms. These new school standards are not a mistake. They weren't put there by a minority of radicals. This is what the public at large believes. The public is fully invested in transgenderism and gender choice and has rejected the creation mandate that God made them male and female. Did you hear this story? The college in the Ozarks is in a lawsuit against the Biden administration because HUD is forcing the college to have co-ed dorms and co-ed bathrooms. Because according to HUD, to not have co-ed dorms and bathrooms is a violation of the Fair Housing Act, which prohibits discrimination based upon sexual orientation or gender identity. So to not discriminate means to not make any distinctions between male and female. I went over to my town library in Old Bridge, and there are plenty of books in the children's section indoctrinating children into the LGBTQ worldview. For example, this book, No One Owns Color, where boys don't have to be blue and girls don't have to be pink. And the whole book was about how you should not feel compelled to follow any cultural norms. This was just a subtle way to break down gender distinctions in children. Otherwise, there's really no reason for the book. There is also this book, The Meaning of Pride. And this book was directly teaching that LGBTQ is morally acceptable and is to be celebrated. On this page, quote, "We worked hard so that we can be true to who we are. There's no longer any Christian teaching that we must fight our lustful, deviant desires to fight our sinful nature. Instead, we must be true to whatever we feel." And this page with pictures of popular drag queens, quote, "If it makes you feel good, it's fierce." And this page, "Pride means wearing whatever you want." And the poison in the children's section of the library was not just these books, but almost all of the books were godless, inane, believe in yourself, God is nature, nonsense. I never bring my children to the public library to check out books. Government needs to just get out of the book business. The culture is gone. We are living in Sodom. As the prophet Isaiah called Israel, Isaiah 1:10, "Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the instruction of our God, you people of Gomorrah." You know, it's often been said, and it is true, that the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was not merely homosexuality, but the support of homosexuality, because certainly not all the people in Sodom and Gomorrah were homosexuals. But the citizenship approved the lifestyle. One doesn't have to be a homosexual to be in rebellion to God. All one has to do is support and celebrate those who are in rebellion to God's law. As we read in Romans chapter 1, verse 32, to give hearty approval to those who practice such sexual deviance. Literally in the Greek, to think well of. Here's a Bible study. In the book of Judges, chapter 19, we read the story of a violent homosexual act in the city of Gibeah, in the tribe of Benjamin. In the next chapter, the other tribes of Israel asked the tribe of Benjamin to deliver up the perpetrators of this immoral act. The Benjamites refused and instead side with these immoral men. And hence, the entire tribe of Benjamin becomes culpable and the entire tribe is judged. To side with LGBTQ is to commit the sin of Sodom. A third point. Notice that supporting LGBTQ means supporting these sexually explicit books for children. Yes, there is a group called Gays Against Groomers, but they don't represent mainstream LGBTQ ideology or the agenda. I mean, I remember there were groups called Gays Against Same-Sex Marriage, but they were outliers. LGBTQ is about practicing and celebrating sexual deviance. It is a belief that sexual lusts are to be embraced, and if it's good for adults, then it's good for children. So, of course, they want to sexualize children because sexuality is their identity and it's their God. 2 Peter 2:14, having eyes full of adultery that never cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, having a heart trained in greed, accursed children. Deviant sexual desires never take place in a vacuum. There is a slippery slope. There is such a thing as a gateway drug. And the scriptures, in describing this sin, describe it for what it is. You know, the unsaved are quite desensitized. They're calling it an alternative lifestyle, to be gay, it's just a choice. But the scriptures awaken the naive and explain what's really going on in the heart. Romans chapter 1, verse 24, they're given over to the lust of their hearts, to impurity. Romans 1:25, they exchange the truth of God for a lie. Romans 1:26, they're given over to degrading passions. Romans 1:27, they burn in their lust one toward another, committing indecent acts. And Romans 1:28, they're given over to a depraved mind. Jude 18, they're mockers following after their own ungodly lusts. Ephesians chapter 2, these are people who live in the lust of the flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and the mind. Titus chapter 3, these are people who are enslaved to various lusts and pleasures. The only way to overcome sexual deviance is to identify it for what it is. Here's a story out of Maine. Quote, middle school librarians now think homosexual pornography is appropriate reading for an 11-year-old student. An 11-year-old sixth grader got up at a school board meeting to read a page from the book Nick and Charlie, which is about a homosexual couple having sex. Here's this young man's testimony.
Hi, my name's Knox Zajac. I'm 11 years old and I go to Windham Middle School. I'm a sixth grader. I was in the library and this book was on a stand. I'd like to read you a page. My back over my hips as I ask if we should take our clothes off. And he's saying yes before I finish my sentence. He's pulling off my t-shirt, laughing when I can't undo his shirt buttons. He's undoing my belt. I'm reaching into his bedside drawer for a condom. We're kissing. Again, we're rolling over. Obviously, you can see where this is going. I don't know if it's because we're feeling especially emotional or just tired, or these past couple of weeks have been too much. But this reminds me so much of the first time we had sex. We were both fucking terrified, and the whole thing was kind of terrible because we didn't know what we were doing. But it was good too, so good, because we were a mess of emotions, and we were scared and excited, and everything felt new. So this sort of thing, this sort of feels like that. Nick touches me like he's scared that any minute. Now, this book was at my middle school, and it was on a stand. When I rented it out to show my dad it, the librarian asked if I wanted more and if I wanted a graphic novel version.
So this is what these LGBTQ advocates in Glen Ridge are supporting. And from my experience, those at the rally supporting the library knew exactly what was in these books. Because these people approve of this behavior and they want it normalized. A fourth point. As God's prophets to this generation, the Christian community needs to explain to the people what the future holds for them, where this immorality will lead, just like the biblical prophets warned of the judgment to come. The judgment that fell upon Sodom was given to be an example, a pattern, a model of what comes upon such people. Jude 7, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they in the same way as these indulge in gross immoralities and went after strange flesh, are exhibited as an example in undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. And just as Jesus explained to the city of Jerusalem, Luke chapter 19, for the days will come upon you when your enemies will throw up a barricade against you and surround you and hem you in on every side, and they will level you to the ground and your children within you because you did not recognize the time of your visitation. The people of Glen Ridge were claiming that Dave and Fran were making Glen Ridge an unwelcome place, an unsafe community. When, as it usually goes in such cases, the very people who are rejecting the law of God are the ones making their town unsafe. As Jesus said, these people do not know the things that make for peace. Glen Ridge will someday be a scourge, a terror, a curse, and we can say this with confidence. Deuteronomy chapter 28. But it shall come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, which I charge you today, all of these curses will come upon you and overtake you. The Lord will send upon you curses, confusion, rebuke, and all that you undertake to do until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly on account of the evil of your deeds because you have forsaken me. Do we believe God's word? If we do, then we can confidently explain what the future will be. Galatians chapter 6, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. So Christian, weep not for yourselves or because of your persecution, but weep for the people of Glen Ridge, in view of what will soon come upon them. As Jesus said in Matthew chapter 18, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, and whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung about his neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. The question that came up afterwards in my discussion with Dave and Fran was, what are Christians to do? Given the trajectory of our nation going towards Sodom, and there's no chance of Christians turning this around until God steps in and judges. Well, the answer is that we still need to be watchmen on the wall. Being politically and culturally vocal, only if you see a chance of legislative success, is not the job of the watchman. God would have his people warn the nation regardless of the national response. Stop being motivated by earthly legislative victories. We're doing this for God. The outcome does not matter. Ezekiel 33, now as for you, son of man, I have appointed you as a watchman for the house of Israel. So you will hear a message from my mouth and give them warning from me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I'll require from your hand. But if you on your part warn a wicked man to turn from his way, and he doesn't turn from his way, he will die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your life. Now, fortunately, we can also be assured that now that we're in the new covenant, our stand will also encourage other Christians. It will help them stand. As Elijah, in his day, those 7,000 that didn't bow the knee to Baal. And our stand will awaken some souls to their need for faith and repentance in Jesus Christ. And I do see that happening. If just one soul is saved for all eternity, everything Dave and Fran went through, everything every Christian is going through and speaking to the culture, will be worth it. And finally, fear not. God's people will be vindicated. That vindication is promised, and it will come soon. Isaiah chapter 50, verse 8. Behold, he who vindicates me is near. Who is he who contends with me? Or how about James chapter 5? Be patient, strengthen your heart, for the coming of the Lord is near. The judge is standing at the door. So, Philippians chapter 1, verse 28. In no way alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and that too from God. Thanks for listening. I beseech you, brethren, share the link to this program on social media so that we can get Dave and Fran's story trending for the instruction, for the warning, for the encouragement of the people of God. Thanks for listening again, and subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign. We'll be right back.